Welcome back, boys and ghouls, to the Saturday Night Freak Show Halloween episode. Tonight I'm your host Colin, and I'm surrounded by a bunch of Halloween freaks, including...
This is Brent.
This is Tommy Two-Tone Terrorizer.
This is Travis. Travis.
And tonight we thought we'd mix it up a little bit, so we watched a couple of cartoons from our childhood, three of them, starting with The Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Ichabod Crane. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, so that's...
Starring Bing Crosby.
Yeah, that's a pretty that's good it. Bing Crosby impersonation right there. Yeah, so that's the old Walt Disney one that I remember seeing a bunch of times, you know, when I was a kid. It seemed like it was on TV every year around Halloween. That was like, you know.
A staple. Yeah. Part of Disney's Halloween treat, where Disney would take all their, I don't want to say all their, but just all their freaky stuff. I mean, some of the stuff wasn't even horror related, but.
When did they do the grinning, what is it, grinning? Something ghosts, and it's all the skeletons dancing?
I don't know.
Black and white?
Yeah, I don't know, because I haven't even been able to find that on a collection yet.
It's on YouTube, I think.
I'm sure it is.
It's like part of, the thing, like Merry Melodies, that's somebody else, isn't that?
Yeah, Merry Melodies is Looney Tunes.
Yeah, I thought this was
Disney. Disney was Silly Symphonies.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, and, you know, they've always did, like, the Mickey through the Looking Glass.
Mm-hmm. The Ghost Chasers.
The Ghost Chasers with Mickey, Goofy, and Donald. They always did the Donald Duck with Huey, Dewey, and Louie dressed up as the devil, the ghost, and the witch or whatever.
Yeah.
And the gorilla. I want to say there's a gorilla loose on the town.
I think I saw this as maybe part of, like, the Wonderful World of Disney or something like that. And that's why it always kind of surprised me, you know, because it was a Halloween staple. It always kind of surprised me when I would see it in the video stores. It was always paired up with The Wind in the Willows. And it's like, what the heck? So, I don't know if you know, like, was this a like a theatrical release, like back in the 50s or whatever?
I don't know if it is a theatrical release. I'm not positive, but it is, you know, one movie. Because I want to say the name of the movie is The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad. Yeah. So, yeah, it starts off with The Wind in the Willows, but we didn't watch that.
Yeah, this is mostly, I mean, it's just, it's, the basis is they're doing cartoon interpretations
classic.
Of literature.
Yeah, classic literature. Literature.
Well, that's
which I've always loved, the old Disney, where they, you know, you got, like, your old bookshelf from the 60s, and the book pulls itself out and opens itself to the page. I've always liked that. That's a good way to open up anything.
That was neat. That was cool to see that. It's like a floating book. You don't know if somebody's actually holding it or not. And then
you don't know. Someone imagineered it.
When the page is open, it almost looks like it's animated.
Yeah. The page is it open might even there. Be. Yeah. Could even be.
And it has those great illustrations of, like, where Sleepy Hollow is in relation to New York. I read the story not too long ago. Somebody, we were talking about doing, like, a radio play version of it. And so I went back and, you know, was reading
it. I remember.
Yeah. And when I read the story, which this follows, like, pretty closely.
Damn closely.
I mean, it's about, you know, Ichabod Crane's a school teacher, comes to Sleepy Hollow, and he's from the city, and then he, you know, romances all the ladies of the town, and then eventually sets his sight on Katrina Van Tassel. She's the daughter of the richest guy in town, but that stirs the ire of Brom Bones, this kind of buff dude who also wants the attention of the fair maiden. And because of that, Brom tells a ghost story about the Headless Horseman. And then the second half of the movie, I would say it's like at least 5 minutes or longer, is, you know, this, it's just Ichabod riding his horse through, you know, this grove, all spooky, and seeing, like, you know, trees that look like specters, and, you know, the frogs are belching out, Headless Horseman, Headless Horseman, Headless Horseman. He gets all scared, and then eventually the Headless Horseman shows up with the flaming pumpkin and all that. But in reading the original story, I was really disappointed because, like, there really is no supernatural element.
No, it's all... Well, and I like how even this one, you know, it has the ending just like the book where people say, oh, you know, they didn't see the teacher again, but, you know, some say he's married and have kids. What I've always took in the story as that Bron Bones guy killed him. He told him a scary story about the Headless Horseman to throw him off his guard later at night and then just killed him. Right. And then that's why he gets to marry the Katrina chick, is because he gets rid of his romantic rival.
That's possible. I took it literally that, you know, when they said, like, you know, there's stories of, you know, he was back in New York and he married some other girl and blah, 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 blah. So I guess if I took that literally, I took it that it was Brom, like, after Brom tells him the story, him and his buddies dress up like the Headless Horseman and literally chase Ichabod out of town.
Yeah.
And he's never seen it. Yeah. He's so freaked out, he doesn't even come back.
I always thought he killed him, and then Bron Bones just told everybody, hey, you know, he's probably got married again. You know, he's living it up somewhere else. That's, you know? Because the thing about Ichabod Crane, and I like how they did that in this movie, is that back in the day, and this is in the Irving Washington story, but back in the day, a teacher wouldn't just teach in his town, and that's it. He'd travel around the country teaching, but what it is that how parents paid for the teachers is basically by taking the teacher in for like a week. Like, say, 1 week it's this one family's turn.
And then on to other different, you know, so they'd set him up with like room and board and give him food.
Give him food. But I like how in this show, Ichabod Crane was just about everybody's food. Looking at what all the kids had to eat.
They kind of make Ichabod out to be kind of like a jerk. I mean, he's a womanizer, and he's like, he's after Katrina not because, like, you know, she's a pretty lady, but he wants to set his sights on Katrina because the father's wealthy, and if he marries her, then he could have all this gold to himself and stuff like that. So it's like, they kind of make Ichabod out to be kind of a dick.
He's definitely a schemer. He's somebody that is he's trying to get what's coming to him, or even, you know, make sure that he gets what he feels he deserves. I mean, even there's a scene early on where he has the chance to scold a boy for drawing a goofy picture of him where he looks like a bird, and instead he sees that he's got a full lunch, and then instead of just taking the lunch, he looks a little bit further and sees how much he can get for that. And if he gets invited over to the house, then he knows that the kid's mom's going to make him this dinner. And, you know, he's always scheming, figuring out ways.
I like he had his daily planner and his daily planner, but it was always like what meals he was going to eat. And then like what women's socials he was going to go to or be part of. That's all it was food and women's socials. And get in with the chicks, 'cause they're the ones that cook the food.
I like that he was reviewing the different events that he went to, you know, he would write down, like, it was like roast turkey, and he writes down excellent. And underlines it. That's,
you'd want to remember that. You can look back on that.
Yeah, that's a place he's going to visit again for sure. Yeah, it was. It's a cool film. It's interesting because the first, like, how long was this? Half hour?
If that.
Probably 20 minutes. Something like that.
And it really is like the first 10 or 15 minutes is really nothing supernatural, nothing going on. It's just
him. Well, it's really building the love story, building the idea that there's the Bron Bones in town, and he's after the chick. And then when Ichabod gets interested in her.
Mm-hmm. Bron Bones is kind of like a Gaston type character. He's
For sure.
Oh yeah, from Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Kind of drawn the same way. Yeah, I mean it's just kind of funny, you know, going back to this and like how many times I've seen the story of Sleepy Hollow over the years. I mean, I remember back in the day there was like a American Playhouse version. I think they had
Jeff Goldblum version
in it. Yeah. There was that one, and then I think the guy from Airplane was in one, maybe, Robert Hayes.
Yeah.
And then, eventually then you get the Tim Burton version, which changes Ichabod from a school teacher to a constable from New York who's coming up. And in that one, of course, you know, it's all, you know, witchcraft and
they turn the fortune person of Van
Tassel.
Yeah, they turned his fortune into like a town conspiracy.
And
that's why it has something to do with the legend of Sleepy Hollow. You know, trying to actually add story to it instead of like I said, I like this simple version where it is about a dude just trying to scare this other guy, because Ichabod Crane is a very superstitious person. So Bron Bones knows, oh man, if I tell this creepy ass story, you know, we can chase him out of town or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even though this, I like how the cartoon shows you what Ichabod is seeing, you know, or what he thinks he's saying. You know, he does see this headless horseman. Even like one. Looks down the neck or whatever of it. But I think that it is still like what's in his mind, because they already set up as soon as he enters the woods. Like I said, they set up him thinking the insects are saying certain words, and he hears, you know, all sorts of. So they're already setting up the idea that he's seeing and hearing things, you know, based off of his mindset, you know. Mm-hmm. So when the Headless Horseman comes into play, you could take it as a reality, but at the same time, you can take that as, no, it was all in his head.
They have that really cool shot of the moon where the clouds are, they look like hands.
Yeah.
Grabbing the moon. And that, all of the forest is just kind of closing in on him as he walks down this path.
Mm-hmm.
And the Budweiser frogs.
I like how quiet that whole scene is. I mean, the whole thing goes quiet, except for the insects. And like when he starts laughing at his own imagination, there's that weird echo to it. That
Disney is always really good at doing the creepy stuff. You know, I mean, everything, all their films have it.
Night on Bell Mountain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're always really good at getting creepy shit going.
Black Cauldron.
Mm-hmm.
Even all of the, I mean, Beauty and the Beast, The Lion King, Little Mermaid, all that, you know, their villains are always like.
What was this, the Sleeping Beauty? Was that the evil
Melissa
queen?
Melissa
Finn.
Yeah.
She was awesome. To this day, she's awesome.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
They're quacktastic.
And now there's a new Sleepy Hollow as we're recording this. There's a television show now that also makes Ichabod Crane a detective. What is he? He's a soldier or whatever. He gets transported to the present day, and there's a colonial. So that's, I think, in the book, there may be, when Brom tells the story, I do believe that, I could be wrong, but I do believe that Brom makes some kind of suggestion that the Headless Horseman was a Hessian mercenary that fought during the Revolutionary War. I think that maybe that's where that comes from, because both the Tim Burton version and the TV version now, you know, use that as the backstory that, you know, he's this, you know.
What's a Hessian?
German.
Okay.
So in the Tim Burton version, Hessians. Was Ichabod, was he called to Sleepy Hollow? Did somebody want him to come, or did he, on his travels, does he just end up there?
He's in that one. He's at the forefront of like forensic investigation. He's the odd duck in New York because he's trying to say, like, you know, forensically we can prove who murdered these people.
Right.
And so the magistrate there basically says to, you know, put you to the test. This is, you know, or you're fired. There's a village of Sleepy Hollow and they've got this weird problem. You go up there and solve it. And so that's pretty much how it starts off.
Yeah, because that's, I mean, I don't know which one I like better, because now with this newer version, he's a traveler, a time traveler, really, that just happens, you know, ends up in this situation. And with the Disney version that we watched, he's a school teacher that travels to this town, and, you know, these events start to happen around him.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he provokes it a little bit just through his interest in Katrina. But I kind of like the idea of Ichabod coming to town to, you know, to figure out what's going on, and then discovering this headless horseman.
It's better for a movie plot. If you do it that way, but
I suppose it is. Yeah.
But the story, the original story, is still one of those great like classics of classic American ghost stories. You know, I mean, it seems like everything else, not everything else, but a lot of stuff that, you know, we think of as like ghost stories, monster stories, all comes from the old world, you know, carried over. And then you really had, like, you know, Washington Irving or Edgar Allan Poe or H.P. Lovecraft, or, you know, Ambrose Bierce, I think, you know, actually, you know, those old scary folk tales and stuff like this. And this is one of those classics that's endured for, you know, a couple hundred years now. So,
And going back and watching an authentic Disney cartoon with the hand drawing the cells, everything is just, I don't know if kids are going to appreciate it like the way that we do, because we're, you know,
you gotta show it to him young enough.
Through, yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, it's got the songs. It's got a couple songs in it, Disney songs. It's got the typical, you know, Disney animation drawings, and you know, the it's cool because it's narrated. It's narrated, and the songs are sung by Bing Crosby. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
You could listen to that dude for hours.
Yeah.
Bing Crosby.
And I think, anyway, that the 30-somethings now, we grew up with traditional Disney animation, but through our, as we grew, Disney kind of grew out of that and are now obviously doing Pixar stuff.
Mm. But even their Mickey Mouse cartoons now are like on TV on Disney Junior or whatever. They're all CG.
It's just
easier, I think, to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, than
they still do some. I mean, like what Princess and the Frog was still
right.
Yeah, but how long ago was that?
That put the nail in the coffin.
That was the last one, which I do like that movie.
That's Princess and the Frog review.
It harkens back to the nostalgia that I think that we have that kids don't have. Today, I mean, maybe something new will come along and Pixar will be their nostalgia 30 years from now.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I feel like it's a dying
art. Just hand-drawn animation as a whole,
a dying appreciation for that.
See, I'd say it's coming back to America though, because we're finding ways to cheap around things, and that's why you have shows like Archer and
That's true.
Because
Simpsons are still going on.
Yeah, they're finding cheaper ways around it to still be American made. Because that's the only reason hand animation went away, is because it was too expensive for America to produce. We were sending all our work overseas.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just now starting to become easy again. You know, you got Metalocalypse, Archer. You got a lot of. Because
there's a lot of computer assist.
I think, for sure. Now.
And that's the thing that I wouldn't call that like that nostalgic. Animation, because you can tell when you watch Archer or Metalocalypse that it is the, you know, the like one frame movement. It's not like this fluid, everything's moving.
Well, it's closer to Japanese animation is what it is.
It is, yeah. Know, and Japanese even the animation. Simpsons, are the Simpsons in Korea now?
I think so.
I think they're being animated in Korea anyway.
Probably for a while. Sure.
Well, I don't know. I mean, a lot of that has to do with like frame rates and stuff, you know, as far as how fluid stuff happens. I know Snow White, for instance, was done at like 24 frames a second at film speed.
Right.
And a lot of, you know, like your 80s cartoons, you know, when they were really cheap, like the G.I. Joes and the Transformers and stuff, even through, you know, those ones were done at like, I don't know, they do like 18 frames a second or something like that.
16.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you would cut down on the workload, because if every second has to have 16 drawings versus 24, you know,
you'd
cut down, you know, your workload.
Yeah.
And then they just, you know, you animate like a part of the, you animate the head, and then, you know, that's one shot, and the mouth moves, you know. So you only had to draw that head once for like 5 seconds or something like that.
But a lot of times, like this old, like especially this Sleepy Hollow, the reason animation just, you had to go cheap, is because animation used to be for movie theaters and then it became for TV.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're mass producing things for TV, you just got to go cheap. You got to go.
Sure.
You know, that's why all the cartoons from the 50s pretty much look like shit. All the old Popeyes, and they just couldn't spend any money on it.
Mm.
Well, what about like
Superman?
Sure.
Well, but that's from Fleischer. But that's from 1940. Those have a lot more movie theaters.
Yeah, because those are like 24 frames per second.
And supposedly they're still the most expensive cartoons ever produced.
Yeah, probably that's why.
What about Bugs Bunny and all that?
All the old Bugs Bunny. If it was pretty much from the 30s and 40s, it was made for theaters.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't do it well because you didn't even get TV until the mid-50s.
Yeah.
So.
And then stuff like Tiny Toons and all that, is that shipped out, do you think? Like,
yeah.
So that's okay.
I think everything is.
Except for, like I said, Archer and Metalocalypse and like South Park. And I bet even Family Guy shipped out. I'm sure.
Well, what they would do, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, maybe we're given the impression that, like, all the work was done in Korea. But what
artists here would do the keyframes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, whenever it's like the character's arm has to be at his side, we draw that. And then the character's arm has to be outstretched, we draw that. And then the Korean guys would draw everything the frames in between.
Right.
Yeah. So the American guys, I think, did the keyframe arts for, you know, art for the characters, then shipped it off with the instructions, and then, you know, it was all filled in.
Right.
So, anything else on Sleepy Hollow? We got recommendations. We hate it. What do we think?
I loved it. I think Sleepy Hollow, show your kids, and if you remember it and you're an adult, watch it and just go back and revisit that nostalgia, because it's a great film and it's actually pretty creepy. I think it's perfect for Halloween. Recommendation.
I think it's I mean, it's definitely a classic story that, you probably, I mean, like, everybody needs either watch this or read the story. I mean, familiarize yourself with Sleepy Hollow. I mean, this is probably the truest version that you're gonna get to the actual, you know.
Hmm.
And since it's only 20 minutes long. You know.
Yeah, if you don't like it, it's only 20 minutes long. Yeah, it'll be over shortly.
Yeah, like, it is definitely a classic. You have to watch it every Halloween. It's part of the mandatory thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Introduce your kids to it. Boom. The next movie that we watched, or sorry, short program, was The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Blockhead.
Good grief.
Yeah, The Great Good Pumpkin, grief. Charlie Brown is, I mean, it's a 1966.
Yeah.
1966, Charles Schultz. It's this his second animated film. The first one was
Christmas.
Christmas. Charlie Brown Christmas. Which was like 50s, actually.
And they did one more? Thanksgiving?
They did a couple. They did a Thanksgiving one. They did election.
Oh, the elected. One. Yeah, sorry.
That's right. Well, they did lots of specials.
They did a summer one. And
Bon Voyage, Charlie Brown. I mean, they just did lots of specials.
Where was I? I don't remember.
Because there was no... There
I
was
the Christmas
until,
one and the Halloween one.
Until the TV show called the Charlie Brown and Snoopy Show, all it was like almost every year there'd be like a half an hour long special.
Mm.
It was almost what it was.
Yeah, because I mean, like, but I mean, the two that are the two that are probably the most famous are the Christmas and the Halloween.
I think so. Yeah,
I think those air have
a lot.
Those air a lot. Those both of those have aired on network television since they first came out.
Mm-hmm. Like every year, you say.
Every year.
Since, yeah.
Like multiple times each year. Like
ABC always does the Charlie Brown Christmas followed by the Grinch. Always.
Mm.
They do the Charlie Brown Christmas, and they always on Halloween they always do Great Pumpkin. Mm. It's just a tradition that ABC's always had. So that just like they always show Ten Commandments every year.
Yeah.
And Sound of Music every year.
So for that one person out there that has not seen The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, what's it about?
I mean, it's about, you know, Linus, one of the Charlie Brown characters. He believes in the Great Pumpkin, which is pretty much Santa Claus.
At Halloween.
At Halloween. So he goes out and he waits in a pumpkin patch, waiting for the Great Pumpkin to show up.
Carrying a bag of candy.
Bag of candy and presents.
Or toys,
and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then all the other, all the other Snoopy gang is out, you know, trick-or-treating. They go to a party. This is your first television appearance of, like, Snoopy as the World War One flying ace.
Mm.
Yes.
In his fight against the Red Baron.
That was an awesome sequence. I mean, I've forgotten about. I mean, remember, but kind of vaguely. But watching, it's just he crawls up on the top of his, you know, he's all pomp and circumstance, gets on the top of his doghouse, and then you never leave really that shot.
No,
there's no pullbacks or anything to show that he's flying, but the background behind him is moving and the lights changing, and you know, he's, you know, and he gets shot down in the end. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it really leaves you up to, it's your own imagination as to whether or not he's actually flying as to what's going on around
him. You can really tell that, like, he's, you know, the dog's using his imagination and pretending that he is a World War One. Because, like, once he gets shot down, then he's got to sneak around the French countryside. Right. But he's really just traveling around town.
Yeah.
it's like Band of Brothers before Band of Brothers.
Right.
And this also has the classic, the traditional scene in which Lucy, you know, the Charlie Brown goes to kick the football and Lucy pulls it away. That scene's in there as well.
Well, he mentions, you know, that I'm not going to do it again. And, you know, of course, he ends up running at it and she pulls the thing. So I can't remember in the Christmas special, does that also happen?
No.
It was just a thing in the comic strip?
It was a thing in the comic strip that would always happen. I mean, just like the World War One flying ace. Because, I mean, like, these are the only specials that they made. They only made the two for, like, the longest time. So everything else was from comics. Mm. So that's why, like, pulling it away would be, you know, in the comics, and, you know, all the references to, you know, they've probably even done the Great Pumpkin in the past. You know, like, in the comics, they've already done the Great Pumpkin. You know, he does this every year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because, you know, I used to always get the one-a-day peanuts, and, like, you know, like, here's a peanut strip, so I'm pretty familiar with my peanut strips, so...
You know what was great about watching it this time, and I haven't seen it for a number of years, but watching it tonight, so you've got Linus out in this, you know, this pumpkin patch that I'm assuming he grew, this pumpkin patch is just true. You know, there's no hypocrisy. The sincerity of this pumpkin patch is
the most sincere pumpkin patch.
Yes, and that's what's going to bring the great pumpkin, right? Well, he invites Sally out to sit in the pumpkin patch with him, and sure enough, you know, she's I'll go along with this, but there gets to be that point where all the other kids have gone trick-or-treating, they've gone to the dance, they've gone to the party, and they're coming back, and they're like, oh, so they're kind of mocking Linus, you know, Lucy's saying, oh, where's your great pumpkin, Linus, and at that point, Sally breaks down, and she's like, ah, I wasted my Halloween because I was out here in this pumpkin patch with you all night and nothing happened, waiting for this mythical beast, the great pumpkin, to show up. And she just loses it, you know, I mean, puts everything on the table. And I think the reason why the great pumpkin didn't show up is because Sally was in that fucking pumpkin patch. And she was not sincere. She was thinking about, you know, she was elsewhere. She was, oh, I could be trick-or-treating. Oh, I could be this. Oh, okay, I kind of like Linus. I'll stick this out and see what happens. I'm, you know, she's curious, but she's not sincere.
That's a running theme with peanuts. I mean, in the Christmas special, you know, you want the sincerity of the Christmas tree. You know.
Well, it's even kind of borne out by the end of the episode. You know, like Lucy ends up bringing Linus home and putting him in bed, and he wakes up the next day, goes to see Charlie Brown. And then Charlie Brown's like, you know, I'm guessing that the great pumpkin didn't show up. He's like, no. He's like, well, I've done a bunch of stupid things, too. And Linus is like, what? Stupid? Next year, it's totally going to have the remorse.
Oh, you want me to blow your guys' minds?
Yes.
Dude, the great pumpkin is God. That is what this whole show is about. Even though it's a Halloween episode, this is actually about believing in a religion that everybody else is like, that's phooey. How, you got no proof, you got nothing. They go out, they're getting their treats now, they're getting what they want now, where he's like, no, I'm going to sit in this pumpkin patch and try to be as serene as possible. That way when he does arrive, I'll get presents and whatever. And when Sally's like, well, maybe, what if there is a great pumpkin? So she stands there with him because she doesn't get an automatic reward from it. She's like, this is bullshit. You made me waste my... I could have been out getting my rewards, getting my treats and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. This movie's about...
Was Schultz, like, really religious?
Oh, yeah.
Dude,
yeah,
hell yeah. He was Schultz super, was super religious.
He was super religious.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why it really... When I started hearing about how religious this program was, that's when it all started clicking. I'm like, fuck yeah, the Great Pumpkin is God. It's crazy.
And Linus is specifically, like, the most religious out of all of them. Because, Linus does the Christmas speech.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And the Christmas thing. But, like... when you would go, like, even in the comic strips, Linus is always reading the Bible. Mm-hmm. Like, religiously. He's quoting the Bible.
Yeah. Reads the Bible religiously.
Yeah, he's always reading the Bible, and like, Linus is, like, the religious aspect of mm-hmm. that show.
And it's, I mean, so I like that. It's weird that he did a Halloween special, but it was just about everybody's beliefs. It wasn't saying this is Christianity. It wasn't saying, it was right, just yeah. about if you believe something that other people think is bullshit, you know, you need to like stand true in your foundations and whatnot and just, you know, don't let people call you stupid for it. Even if you, you know, even if, because like I said, he sat all night in the pumpkin patch and he has to admit that nothing happened, but. That's just because there was something wrong with the situation, right? It was nothing to do with his belief system. Yeah. It was the situation.
He keeps the faith because, like Colin said, he's next year, that's, you know, I mean, that's faith.
Yeah, that's faith. Yeah. You don't give up on faith just because something doesn't go your way.
Right.
You know, you keep going for it.
So it was always, you know, I remember even when I was a kid, this is maybe a little off topic, but when I was a kid watching this show, the thing that stood out about, you know, because it's a Halloween show, right? And you're like, okay, you know, where's all the Halloween action or the spooky action or whatever? Yeah. And especially with the inclusion of that, like, fairly significant time they spend with the World War One Fighting Ace segment, it's like, it really doesn't feel all that Halloween, you know? I mean, it's like, it seems like it's kind of like Halloween light, you know? I mean, as opposed to, like, the Garfield one, which we're going to talk about in a minute, you know? It was kind of like, well, there's pumpkins, and they do go trick-or-treating, and, you know, they do go to a party, and they do dress up, but it is kind of like, you know, there's nothing really, you know, spooky or, you know, anything that could be misconstrued as, you know.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's super, like, I mean, like, the Charlie Brown one literally goes, like, it shows, like, not only does it show, like, it's Halloween trick-or-treating, but it shows, like, all aspects of fall, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it shows them gathering leaves, and, you know, they're making a leaf pile, and Linus jumps into the leaf pile, which was, you know, I mean, everybody did that as kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and, of course. You know, it shows the football sequence, which, you know, falls football time, and then, you know, I mean.
Well, it shows Lucy. This is what I like about Charles Schulz cartoons. It shows kids just do things people do, right? Like, it shows, like, if you were a kid, if you were 4 years old, and you don't know anything about carving a jack-o'-lantern, you know, you watch this, you could see every step it takes to make a jack-o'-lantern, right? You get to see, you know, cutting the top open, taking the guts out, and, you know, he makes, like, a little one-liner joke. You know, all his specials are kind of those little skits. You can kind of tell his little joke skits.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, these are, like you said, these are, if not direct adaptations of his comic strip, you know, he just writes stuff to link them together or something like that. So, but yeah, I like how you can watch these specials and just see what America does through his kids, you know? And like you're saying, the no spooky, it's because, yeah, Peanuts was always just, it wasn't so much, it's like, even though it's a cartoon and a comic strip, they never go far outside of it being a reality, you know? I mean, like, I've always thought it's crazy that you have Snoopy thinking to himself in the comic strip, but they don't do any Snoopy talking in any of the specials.
Just through his mannerisms and his.
Yeah, it's just his.
Well, I mean, he's, you know.
He's got. He makes sounds. Yeah. He does make sounds.
He makes a lot of sounds.
They got laughing there when Linus was writing letters to the group.
That's actually Bill Melendez, one of the main producers. Yeah.
It's his voice?
Yeah. As the he's been the voice of Snoopy for probably like 40 years. Mm-hmm. I don't know when he quit doing it or if he even has.
A lot of those people that did the voice, I mean, like, like Charlie Brown stuff's like really old. I mean, that's like 60s, and I mean, it's like
they may have shuffled off this mortal coil by now.
No, because they were all kids.
Oh, were they?
Oh, yeah. They only shot with, they only like recorded kids. Mm. That's how, I don't like, I, it's probably not this one, but yeah, Fergie from the Black Eyed Peas, she was Sally for a long time. Charlie Brown's sister. I don't know if that was in the Snoopy show or or what. But yeah, they always get kids. That's how, like, if they ever repeat anything, it's like pretty much the exact recording that they use.
Oh, yeah.
Just because it's like, well, you know, we got the kid to say it right one time, you know. Yeah. We can't ask for much more. Maybe they got paid per word. recording, so
you tell like the animation's like really super hand drawn and a lot of, you know, like
that's part of its charm though, you know, too.
Absolutely.
The pencil coloring and everything.
When the movement, when they move, like every line moves as if, you know, you were drawing each frame.
Yeah, that's some of this television animation I was talking about.
Yeah,
I had to pull back the reins a little bit.
It's really cool. It's we've lost that art form.
We didn't lose it.
It's just in another country.
It's all,
The Charlie Brown Christmas special, that I don't know, to me, that one's like, this one is like, this one and the Christmas one are like, I mean, they're like near and dear to my heart. Like, I mean, like, I watch these movies, these, both of them, the Christmas and the Halloween one, literally every year, like, without fail. I mean, like, the Halloween one's kind of, like, important, because it's like, I don't know, I mean, it just, like, me and my mom always used to watch it, you know, because my parents grew giant pumpkins.
Oh, right, yeah.
So, like, you know, the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown was always, I mean, it was always a thing, you know, it's like, my parents grew the Great Pumpkin.
Yeah.
And that was, like, a huge, you know, they kind of did it just because, you know.
Well, the Christmas one, I think I like the Christmas one more than the, it captures more of that feeling of the season to me,
a
little more than this one does. I mean, this one's good, don't get me wrong, but, you know, the Christmas one is like,
the Christmas right one on the really gathers, to me, the Christmas one really sums up the spirit of what Christmas is all about.
Mm. Well, and something that both the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown and the Ichabod Crane story do very well within their artwork, and Tom, you were talking about this, is the idea of portraying fall and portraying, you know, like if you live like we do in a state where you have seasons.
Live like we do.
You
if
have,
you're alive like us.
You get, you know, you get fall and you get to see the changing of the seasons. And I think that both of these films, like, you know, you get the ambers and the different colors and the leaves and the everything about it is just like reinforcing that idea of that basically what you feel like from Halloween all the way up until Thanksgiving, if you're lucky enough not to be in a too cold of a climate, that you get like these colors and you can go outside and play football and you can grow pumpkins and you can wear sweaters and sweatshirts and you can go out and run around with your friends.
Explaining
and
fall to us? Is that what you're doing? Are you explaining
fall? There are people
I'm trying,
maybe listening to our podcast that don't experience fall like we do.
I'm trying to explain the feeling that I got from the imagery that I saw in the film. Does that work for you? Is that cool?
He was cold.
I mean, I'm not just explaining fall. I mean, I think it's the idea of what you're watching reinforcing the idea of this, you know, Halloween time period, I guess.
Hmm.
You know, October.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Is that cool?
Yeah. Any other observations about the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown? Or are we liking it, hating it?
I would recommend it. Obviously. Watch it with your parents. Parents, watch it with your kids. Again, it works on all levels. It's a classic. Absolutely.
It'll be on ABC.
Yeah, watch it on ABC.
It'll be on ABC. That's your recommendation for it?
I mean, it's good. It'll be on ABC if you need to watch it. I mean, this show is my favorite. I mean, this is my favorite. Because, I mean, it's just, it holds a special place in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's very personal to me on a lot of levels.
I'm actually going to go against it a little bit. Like, I like Peanuts. There's jokes in this I really like the I Got a Rock.
Oh, yeah.
But, like Colin said, it's not really Halloween-y. Like, I just explained how, I mean, it's religious. It is a religious show. And it's not a bad thing. But it's not a Halloween thing. You know? It's like, I don't know. So this has always been my least favorite Charlie Brown special. I like the Christmas. I like the Thanksgiving. I like the Easter Beagle. I like a lot of Charlie Brown, but except for this, just because Halloween is one of my favorite holidays, and I don't think Charles Schulz brings it.
Yeah,
he doesn't bring it.
Halloween light.
He's probably one of those guys that shuts his porch light off on Halloween. tries to bring kids to Christ.
He gives people rocks.
Gives them rocks. But, I mean, I'll always love Charlie Brown just because he's just that type of guy you want to hear about go through life. What you were talking about, what the thing of fall, that's what I like about kids' shows. So I like how kids' shows, well, they'll take the time to look at stuff like that, like the simple things like the changing of a season or, you know, because they're trying to explain it to kids. But at the same time, adult shows don't focus on, like, these little things, these little, like, moments in time. Almost like the real important things, right? Like the getting back to the basics of what humanity is and, you know, seasons.
Yeah.
If you want to find out what happens in the seasons, just rewind to Brent's description of the seasons. Soon on audiobook.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's a television classic. It's a staple. I mean, like, you know, it's one of the few, you know, Halloween things that, you know, you gotta show your kids and check out, you know, every year as it comes around. It's kind of seasonal, like It's a Wonderful Life. And then we also watched the most Halloween-y of them all, Garfield's Halloween Special. Somebody should take that one away.
So, Garfield. So, it's a Garfield special from 1985 called Garfield's Halloween Treat.
Just oh, Halloween case. Adventure.
Whoops.
Halloween Adventure.
What?
Yeah, it was totally Halloween Adventure. Yeah. It was
crazy. So, it is about Garfield on Halloween, nonetheless.
Thank God.
Going out and trick-or-treating with Odie, dressed up as pirates. And they're going around trying to get candy.
But something happens.
Yeah, something does happen. They decide to cross the river to go to the other houses. And their ship gets taken by the current. So they just end up going downstream, and then they find a house, and the house has an old man sitting inside it, and the old man explains to them how pirates came to that house, and they swore that 100 years ago from that day they'd go get the treasure. Why? 100 years later? I don't know why. Yeah. They couldn't have come back in 10 years when they're still alive to enjoy the gold, but... But yeah, it's truly, this is like my favorite Halloween special, just because it is, I mean, 100% Halloween. You know,
it kind of mixes it all in there.
It does. You start off with like getting ready with picking out your costume, and you got a little song. All the songs are by Lou Rawls, which if you like golden oldies, Lou Rawls is like one of the popular like black singers from the 60s or 70s. I want to say 70s. Mm. So that guy's awesome. And, yeah, it starts off with getting dressed for Halloween and
raiding John's stash in the attic.
Yeah,
he doesn't throw anything away.
And I like how once again it shows John preparing a jack o' lantern. Like,
that's right.
Yeah, everything's about showing kids how to make a jack o' lantern.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and showing how to make a jack o' lantern, showing how to get dressed for Halloween.
Yeah, have some instructions for you kids that don't know anything about Halloween.
Yeah,
and well, how to go out trick or treating. I mean, literally, this is how you go trick or treating.
And go ahead.
I think that this is a good point to say that Garfield and Ichabod Crane and these two stories that we saw tonight, they share something in common. They're both scheming. Where Garfield, he understands that he can get twice the candy if he brings Odie with him trick or treating. So all he has to do is dress up Odie and take him with, and he's going to steal his candy later on, which is, you know, I mean, that's, they have, the two things they have in common is this scheming and this gluttony, you know, where you see Garfield early on in this, you know, Halloween morning.
Garfield and gluttony?
And and John, you know, makes him his breakfast. He's like, no, I got to save room for candy. And then he's like, well, maybe I'll just have a muffin. Maybe I'll just have some bacon. Maybe. He ends up taking the whole thing, but I think it's great that Garfield has an agenda for bringing Odie with him trick-or-treating.
It's funny how Dave or John just lets his animals run around Yeah, do whatever they want.
Trick or treating, boys. Here, have some sex. Yeah. You know? Take their little bags. Well, it's actually, you know, you're saying the reason that they end up in the spooky part of the show is because of Garfield's greed. You know, it's like, let's go across the river to those other houses and get their candy there.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the first, it's like, it seems like the show's divided into, like, two halves. There's, like, the first half, which is more like, you know, okay, hey, we're trick-or-treating. This is what, you know, Halloween is all about for, you know, most kids that, you know, experience it. And then the second half becomes, like, you know, the spooky tale of Halloween. I mean, I guess that's why I was thinking, like, the, you know, the pirate story or whatever, that it's, you know, they 100 years from, you know, they were going to come back and get their gold, and it's buried on this island, and I'm the, you know... It, and that guy is just literally spooky looking. And yeah, lightning flashing, and it becomes like, you know, the haunted. You know, I mean, like the actual specters of the pirates show up. You know, and it's like a little spook tale. I mean, it's just like it's a classic kind of, you know, Halloween ghost story. You know, it feels like. Also, I forgot to say that it spends a lot of time with pirates. Because you know they're dressed up. Odie and Garfield are dressed up as pirates. There's a pirate song, which was kind of catchy. All yes. A bunch of yo-ho-hos. Yeah. He's talking like a pirate through. Tom must have been in heaven during this entire...
Yeah, this one, I have seen this. Like, I have seen it. They used to show it on TV when I was a kid, but I probably haven't seen this in a good 20 years, and man, this was a treat. I gotta say, this was
that's why I called the Garfield's Halloween treat.
It was like, oh my god, I remember this, but like I totally remember this, but I forgot how good this was. This was probably Charlie Brown's like special to me, but I see it every year, so it's like, you know. But this one was probably like definitely my favorite. I mean, I kind of thought the Ichabod one was a little dry. I mean, it's a classic tale, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's a little dry in its telling as far as like.
Well, even when you remember that, you remember the horse ride. Yeah, you remember.
You don't remember chased. The. Yeah, and then it's like my God, everyone loves Katrina.
You remember the end. You remember the headless horseman, him throwing the pumpkin. You're like, yeah. Oh man, I really remember like 5 minutes of this entire thing. But like this Garfield one, man, he dresses up as a pirate. And he's like, "Arr, I'm Orange Beardy Pirate. Give me your booty." Steals like the lasagna, and he's all like, when he goes trick or treating, he's like, "Are you be stingy on your loot? Give us some more loot, or I'll have to go inside and pillage your curtains."
And he's got that great way of, "Here, Odie, let me show you how it's done. Ding dong, gimme,
gimme,
yeah, gimme." Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, just. Seeing, I used to read a lot of the Garfield.
Comic strip. It was a comic strip.
They would have books that were the compilation.
Like,
of,
I want to say since like 58 or something like that.
I used to read the books and I used to read the strips too.
Well, maybe 62.
I mean, like when I would read comic strips, I'd read two comic strips. I would read Garfield and Peanuts. And that's it.
Not Dagwood?
Fuck, not Dagwood.
What the hell? Not Family Circus?
Definitely not Family Circus.
What the
Family
fuck is wrong with Family Circus?
Fucking boring.
What was the one
shit
that was like the soap opera with the doctor?
The doctor.
Wasn't there a medical one? It was Doctor something.
Rex Morgan?
Yeah.
Was Rex Morgan MD?
Yeah. I was always like, what the heck is this doing in my Sunday funnies?
You gotta be dedicated to read those ones.
Yeah.
Because it's just three panels of a conversation. You have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And they try to be suspenseful. But
like
it's just
BC
like
BC was kind of like BC.
Hagar the Horrible.
And Hagar is good. Hagar was good.
How is there's no Hagar cartoons?
And, this is going to start going on the rant. BC was okay. And then there was, what was that
one? Was Dagwood the one with the penguin?
No, Dagwood was Blondie. I'm sorry.
Oh. Or was the one with the penguin?
The penguin was something Heights. Isn't it Something Heights?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Doonesbury.
No, that wasn't with the penguin. Doonesbury was the political. The one with the... Man, I just actually had a collection of this.
He's, like, dressed up like Hunter Thompson at one point.
Yeah, I had a collection, like, in my house, like, a month ago. I cannot remember what that strip is called.
The listeners are going, what? They're shouting it out right now. We can't hear you. We can't hear you.
They're not shouting.
Yeah, man. Like,
we don't read fucking comics.
Yeah. Oh, Callan House is just kind of okay.
Zits.
Zits is amazing. That's like one of the modern day, like Roses Rose, Zits. Those are like the modern day classics. Get Fuzzy is pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
The one with the fucking the chick.
Kathy?
Kathy?
I don't know.
Yeah, there was a chick. Kathy, yeah.
But I mean, Kathy, yeah.
Kathy's
terrible.
Over. It's done now. So, the Halloween show. That'll be on our newspaper strips podcast.
Just got off tangent on Garfield and just, I mean, yeah.
He's an icon.
He's
Garfield
an icon.
Garfield is an icon. I have a little Garfield little figure.
What lesson does Garfield learn by the end of this? After Odie saves his life like 100 times.
He just needs to be himself. But he never does learn a lesson. That's why I like Garfield as a character.
He gives Odie the candy.
Well, he gives Odie his candy just because he loves Odie.
Well, after he saved his life, I guess. So maybe that's not a lesson.
Yeah, because he's like, you know, because in the boat, he's like,
saving my life.
He's like, I'm done with this. I just want to be myself and like whatever. But as soon as like luck turns around, he's like, oh, my candy. You know, he goes right back to being a pirate and like, you know, thinking about candy. And that's why I like morally corrupt characters like Garfield, is because there's always room for improvement. You know, whereas like a normal character has to like somehow get into their adventure or someone has to bring them in, a morally corrupt character will always get themselves into it by their own selfish ambition.
Yeah.
So, Garfield's a winner.
Yeah. And it was a good show.
That was a good Halloween program.
Show. Of the three, Tom said Garfield, right? What was your favorite of the three? I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I mean,
say Garfield.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Garfield is probably my newfound favorite. I mean,
just get the holiday collections.
Yeah, just because Peanuts is a special place, but you know that's
It's a special place for Peanuts.
That's
your wheelhouse.
Yeah, that is. But Garfield and the Pirates was...
That's awesome.
That was fun. That was a treat.
Yeah. And it doesn't overstay its welcome. And he came back for whatever, Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever, the Garfield's.
Yeah, and I mean, seeing the Ichabod was... I wanted to see that story again. This Legend of Sleepy Hollow again. I wanted to see that for a while.
I think that was my favorite out of the bunch. Ichabod. Yeah, Sleepy Hollow was... It was just cool to see that traditional Disney animation. And I kind of like, I mean, you know that it's all leading up to this, but I think getting to know these characters and, you know, there's more, the payoff is richer, I think. And then I was surprised. I didn't realize, I guess maybe, I don't know if I have ever seen this, but I didn't realize that Ichabod doesn't get away in the end, you know, or it's... legend that he doesn't, obviously, but I like that idea of leaving it open, like maybe he's living his life with the family and maybe he's dead in the river, you know,
because I swear it's like, to me, dude, Bron Bones killed him and just told everybody, hey, he could be living somewhere else or whatever,
and there's
nothing that backs that up
for Disney to keep that in their version of it is really kind of
in the Disney version, it's implied that the Headless Horseman is real and the Headless Horseman kills him. I mean, that's like the end. He sees that flaming thing coming at him.
Sure.
The end. And then fade up the next day.
That could be dude with a flaming, you know. Of course, except for the only...
He looked down.
That was another thing. Like when
purely supernatural.
When the Headless Horseman is holding a head, it's not a flaming pumpkin. It's like a glowing head. Mm-hmm. And he throws a flaming pumpkin. That could be Bron Bones, not a headless horseman. Bron Bones throws a flaming pumpkin.
They recreate that scene in the Tim Burton movie, I want to say.
I'm sure they did.
It's chased and it's all...
Disney make it?
No, that was Paramount.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, they do... He throws
the flaming pumpkin. Yeah, it is Bron Bones who did it.
Just the whole start of that walk through the woods on the horse, they're setting up the imagination, getting the best of you. So,
like a sleepy horse. His horse is donkey. Sleepy.
Yeah.
It was a horse. Yeah. It was just skinny.
Yeah. I like that he leaves with the plow.
Right.
When he first heads the to plow. The dance, the plow's on the horse.
That's what it's about. It's about like a dopey guy in love.
Yeah. So yeah. We're saying, you should check out all three of these.
Well, hold up. What was your favorite, Colin? Did you have a favorite?
I don't know if I did. I mean, I like them all for different reasons. Probably the Garfield one feels the most Halloweenish to me. Halloween. I mean, that's like, you know, that the Halloween season. You know, I mean, the Legend of Sleepy Hollow has that fucking awesome. And the last 5 minutes of that is the thing that, you know, sticks with you for, you know, the rest of your life after you've seen it. You know, that's awesome. Charlie Brown has this really sweet natured look at kids and, you know, kids playing around. But the Garfield one seems to have, like, you know, it's like the all encompassing. I guess that speaks to me as like that's my Halloween kind of, you know. It's got a little bit of everything. The actual trick or treating and the spook story and, you know, thunder and lightning and pirates. So, but yeah.
Well, watch these and other great. I'm really mad I missed the Toy Story of Terror that was on this year.
Oh yeah,
Pixar's first television special.
Yeah,
it's a Halloween.
They'll play it again.
I don't know if they'll play it again. Well, they'll play it again probably maybe next year, but sure it'll be on a DVD somewhere.
Channels or something like that.
Like a Pixar. I don't have the Disney Channel. Yeah. No, it was on the CW this year. No, it wasn't. It was on ABC. On ABC.
Oh, yeah, ABC.
There's always, you know, I mean,
they'll play it on ABC Family.
Well, I don't have that. That's cable.
Okay.
Okay. The Simples.
We'll find it on the internet.
I mean, they used to show Garfield all the time, but now it's like
they really don't show any Halloween specials anymore.
They show Charlie Brown, you know, and then they show like, you know, they'll do like a Toy Story one. Maybe they'll do like a Shrek one. Or is that Christmas?
They usually do straight to DVD Halloween specials now. It's usually not on TV.
Like the How to Train Your Dragon Halloween special or something.
The Kung Fu Planet.
Panda.
Kung Fu Planet. Don't go there. Do not land there. I like that. Kung Fu Planet. I'm going to remember that, bro.
Yeah. So watch up all these Halloween episodes. Have a happy Halloween yourself. You may be listening to this on Halloween. So if you want to get, and we do other stuff too. We've got a whole bunch of backlog episodes where we watch movies every week and talk about them. You can find those on SaturdayNightFreakShow.blogspot.com. If you want to get a hold of us, tell us what you thought about tonight's episode or any other episode, or tell us what the hell that comic strip is that we couldn't think of. We're at Saturday.
It's like Wuthering Heights or something, I swear. Wuthering Heights. Something like that. Something weird. It's driving me crazy.
Well, somebody's got to email us. SaturdayNightFreakShow@yahoo.com. You can also find all of our backlog episodes on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Podbay FM. And find us on Facebook, facebook.com/SaturdayNightFreakShow. And, God. What the hell?
What is that? Oh God! Oh, they killed him. He killed him. No!
Oh, what is it? Oh my God! That's so huge!
What is it that killed him? I don't see anything.